we have all been there. You know, you are sitting at your desk, just staring blankly at the screen, endlessly clicking next on an annual corporate compliance training module.
Oh, yeah. Just trying to get to the end as fast as humanly possible.
Exactly. You skim a few paragraphs about like bribery or data privacy.
Yeah.
You pass a multiple choice quiz that honestly a 10-year-old could ace. Get your little digital certificate and you go right back to work feeling like you accomplished something.
Right, checking the box.
Yeah, exactly. But here is the multi-million dollar question for you. When the real pressure hits, you know, when a massive deal is on the line at 9 p.m. on a Friday, why does all that knowledge just completely evaporate?
It's such a fascinating phenomenon because we are looking at this fundamental disconnect between how we consume information in a controlled, quiet environment and how human beings actually operate under real-world stress.
I mean, that makes sense. Welcome to the Deep Dive, by the way. Today, we are unpacking an incredibly insightful framework from Excellus, all about creating what they call decision-ready employees.
Which is a huge shift. The compliance industry has basically operated on a completely flawed assumption for decades.
Right. And the mission of our deep dive today for you listening is to explore exactly why smart, well-intentioned people make terrible professional decisions and how to rewire our brains to recognize high-stakes moments, especially when they're disguised as everyday occurrences.
Because that assumption you mentioned, the old way of thinking, is simply that if you tell someone the rules, they will naturally just recall and apply them when the time comes.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because on paper, that sounds completely logical, right?
Yeah.
Teach the rule, learn the rule, follow the rule.
It sounds logical, sure, but it ignores literally everything we know about human biology. If we step back, this isn't just corporate compliance, this is really a masterclass in human behavioral psychology.
Oh, I totally agree.
To make better decisions, we have to completely demolish that baseline assumption that knowing equals doing. We need to look at the difference between what Celis calls a policy-aware employee and a decision-ready employee.
So a policy-aware person just like knows the rules exist.
Basically, yeah, they pass that easy quiz. But knowledge, well, while it's necessary, it's just not sufficient on its own.
Right, because of the forgetting curve. I mean, the biology of this is just wild to me. Research shows that without active contextual reinforcement, you lose roughly 70% of training content within a single week.
70% just gone.
Poof, gone.
And think about the physical reality of your brain in that moment. When you're clicking through that module, you are in a very low stakes, low arousal state.
Probably drinking a coffee, maybe checking your phone.
Exactly. Your prefrontal cortex is only loosely encoding that information. Now, fast forward 11 months, a high stakes situation pops up.
Right. The pressure is on.
Yeah, your stress levels spike. Cortisol floods your system, and your brain just instantly prioritizes immediate survival and action. It is not going to recall the specific legal jargon of a policy you read last January.
The exact language is entirely gone. You are just left with this vague vibe that rules exist.
A vague vibe of compliance, I like that, but a vague vibe does not help you navigate a complex, ambiguous moment.
No, it really doesn't.
And this creates what is known as the recognition gap. This is crucial. When massive compliance failures happen, they are rarely committed by like corrupt supervillains who wake up and decide to break the law.
Right. It's not some movie plot.
Exactly. They are committed by normal people who simply fail to recognize that the completely normal-looking situation they are in right now, well, it's the exact scenario the policy was designed for.
I was thinking about this, and it is so much like driving. It's
Yeah.
the difference between passing a written driving test in a quiet classroom versus knowing how to steer out of a skid on an icy highway.
Oh, that is a perfect analogy.
Right. Because the book knowledge doesn't automatically activate your physical reflexes when the car starts spinning. I mean, you know what a steering wheel is, you know what ice is, but your brain doesn't instantly connect those concepts under sudden, terrifying pressure.
Because the environmental trigger is completely missing in the classroom, so the reflex just stays dormant.
Exactly.
Huh.
But if forgetting the specific rules isn't the only reason we fail, something else must be actively pushing us to make the wrong choice in that critical moment.
Yeah, and that brings us to the invisible forces that just distort our judgment. The Excellus framework calls this the pressure problem.
And to be clear for everyone, we aren't talking about cartoonish pressure, like a boss threatening to fire you on the spot if you don't commit fraud.
No, it's so much more subtle than that. We are talking about everyday professional dynamics that actually feel like good business judgment. They categorize these into authority, normalization, incentive, relationship, and ambiguity.
Okay, can we walk through a real-world example of that?
Absolutely. So imagine it is 9 p.m. on the absolute last day of the third quarter. A regional VP sends a message to the sales team saying, hit the numbers, whatever it takes.
Ugh, the classic whatever it takes mandate. That phrase just makes my skin crawl.
Oh, it's terrifying because it operates as a psychological blank check. So let's say a sales rep has a deal on the table. It is verbally agreed upon with the client, but the client is traveling, so the actual paperwork isn't signed.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Right. The rep absolutely knows that backdating a contract is against company policy. But under that intense end-of-quarter pressure from a figure of authority that whatever-it-takes mandate creates this massive implicit permission structure.
So they just write Tuesday's date on the contract, even though it's Friday. And they probably tell themselves, well, the client technically agreed on Tuesday over the phone, so this document is basically accurate.
Basically accurate. That right there is the sound of pressure warping reality.
It's just the paperwork catching up to reality.
Yeah. But the brain is incredibly adept at resolving cognitive dissonance. This employee holds two conflicting ideas, right? I am an ethical professional, and I am breaking a rule to hit my quota.
Right, those don't mix.
Exactly. So to resolve the discomfort, the brain invents a narrative where breaking the rule is actually the ethical choice.
But, I mean, let me push back a little here, or at least play devil's advocate for a second. In that moment, doesn't that pressure actually make the sales rep feel like they are being a team player?
Oh, absolutely.
Like they're doing the brave, necessary thing for the company by pushing it through rather than being this annoying bureaucratic roadblock.
That is the exact mechanism at play. And it perfectly illustrates the next piece of this behavioral puzzle, the internal rationalization.
Oh. Yeah.
The Excellus methodology identifies this as a distinct, really critical phase. The internal dialogue shifts to, it's probably fine, or, you know, everyone does this, or I'm protecting my team's bonuses.
Wow, so the rationalization just totally masks the danger.
Oh, exactly. Let me give you another common scenario. A project manager is sitting in a vendor review meeting, and she realizes that one of the company's key logistics partners, a vendor handling hundreds of thousands of dollars, is actually owned by her husband.
Oh, wow. I mean, from the outside, that is a glaring, undeniable conflict of interest.
Right, but look at how the rationalization works in her head. She didn't personally hire this vendor. She doesn't even work in the procurement department.
So she feels disconnected from it.
Yes, and whenever vendor performance comes up in these meetings, she just quietly steps back and doesn't participate in the vote. Her brain resolves the conflict by tying the policy to an action.
Oh, interesting. Not the relationship, but the action.
Right. She reasons that because she isn't making a biased decision, no conflict exists. And she ends up staying completely silent about the relationship for 3 years.
3 years. That's wild. But I get it. She tied the risk to a behavioral action rather than a structural relationship. The structure itself was the conflict. But her brain let her believe she was operating ethically by just staying out of the voting.
Yeah, she probably even thought she was being commendable. So once we realize that completely normal professional pressures lead to these dangerous rationalizations, the big question is, how do we build a mental circuit breaker?
Right. How do we stop this natural human process before the damage is done?
This is where the methodology really shifts from theory to practice. They designed this 7-step decision readiness engine specifically to train employees to interrupt the pattern.
It's basically an architecture for behavioral change.
Wow.
Let's explore how this flow actually works, maybe using a scenario involving corporate gifts.
Yeah, let's use a super common one. You are an account manager. A vendor you have worked with for 3 years invites you to a major sporting event. We're talking great seats, hospitality suite, just a really nice evening out.
Sounds great so far.
But here is the catch. Your company is exactly 6 weeks away from completing a massive contract renewal evaluation, and this specific vendor is one of the 3 finalists.
Oh, boy. The genius of using this as a training scenario is just how mundane it is. Like, the situation isn't dramatic at all.
Not at all.
Compliance failures don't arrive wearing a neon sign that says, "Hello, I am a federal offense." They just look like a normal Tuesday afternoon email. There's no briefcase full of cash sliding across a dark table.
Right, exactly. So step one is the situation, which is totally normal. Step two is the pressure signal. In this case, it's a potent mix of relationship and normalization.
Because you genuinely value the contact.
Yes, you've had dinners with them. Corporate hospitality is just standard industry practice. Your brain immediately registers that saying no might damage the rapport, so it feels professionally smarter to just say yes.
Which leads right into step three, the rationalization. Your brain starts crafting the excuse, like, I am not in procurement. I don't even have a vote on the renewal. My attendance at this baseball game isn't influencing anything.
Yep, it's just relationship building. That internal dialogue is what effective training aims to make visible. Because if you can hear that rationalization happening in your own head, you actually have a chance to intervene.
And that brings us to step four, right? The pivot point.
Yes, the recognition moment, the most important step.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. This recognition moment is essentially a mental check engine light.
A mental check engine light. I love that.
Think about the last time your gut told you an email draft was a bad idea, but you sent it anyway. That tiny, fleeting hesitation, that was your check engine light. It is not a blaring, deafening alarm.
Right, it's quiet.
Yeah, it's a quiet, slight friction. Just a subtle feeling that something doesn't perfectly align. Like, in the sporting event scenario, it's the timing. 6 weeks until the renewal.
Exactly. And training people to treat that tiny bit of cognitive friction as actual information rather than just background noise is the ultimate goal. Because once you notice that light, you can execute step five, the decision-ready interrupt.
Which is the core microbehavior you're trying to build muscle memory for.
Right. It's a microbehavior. And crucially, it is not a dramatic refusal. You don't stand up in the restaurant, flip the table, and shout, "How dare you bribe me?"
That would be awkward.
Very. It is simply a pause. You're creating a tiny sliver of space between the psychological impulse to please the vendor and the physical action of accepting the invite.
So what do you say?
You train yourself to say things like, "Let me check my calendar," or "I need to run this by my team before I commit."
That pause is so powerful because it just completely breaks the momentum of the rationalization. You've bought yourself time, but a pause isn't enough on its own, is it?
No, it's not, which is step six. You need an action path. The design rule here is clarity over complexity. When someone is under pressure, they cannot mentally navigate a 50-page compliance manual.
Nobody has time for that.
Exactly. So the framework gives them exactly three options: proceed, stop, or escalate. In this scenario, escalation is the correct and protected path. You forward the invite to compliance or your manager and just ask for guidance.
And if this is a training simulation, step seven is where the feedback loop kicks in.
Yeah.
But the philosophy here flips traditional corporate training totally on its head. It's all about coaching, not correction.
Right. If a learner chooses the wrong path during the training, say they accept the tickets, the feedback doesn't just slap them on the wrist and quote some legal statute.
Like a big red X on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah. None of that. It actively acknowledges why the wrong answer felt so reasonable. It says, "We get it. The relationship made accepting feel like the obvious call. But here is the specific moment, that 6 week window, where the pause would have changed the outcome."
Because if you just tell a professional you are wrong, their ego gets super defensive. The learning just shuts down completely.
Absolutely.
But if you say, "I see exactly why your brain tricked you into thinking this was the right business move, and here's how to catch the trick next time," that actually rewires the behavior. You're dismantling their reasoning error with psychological safety.
It's pedagogical precision. You validate the pressure while correcting the behavior.
Okay, so what does this mean for the organization as a whole? Because training one individual to notice a mental check engine light is one thing. But how does the company know if this methodology is actually working across, like, 10,000 global employees?
Well, the training builds three very specific capabilities: recognition, judgment, and action. The employee learns to identify, this might be an issue, evaluate what are my options, and decide, what should I do right now?
Okay.
To know if it's working, organizations have to abandon vanity metrics.
Oh, vanity metrics,
yeah.
Like time on module or 100% completion rates. Basically just measuring if the video played in the background while the employee was answering emails on their phone.
Exactly. Those metrics only tell you if the training was delivered, not if the workforce was actually changed. So we look for three real signs of success. Number one, employees escalate issues before decisions are made, not after violations occur.
So you're looking for a measurable increase in compliance inquiries.
Yes. People asking, "Is this okay?" before they sign the contract or accept the gift.
Catching the glass before it falls off the table. Mm-hmm. It shifts the culture from reactive policing to proactive risk management. What's number two?
Number two is that managers find themselves fielding gray area questions year-round. It's not just a meaningless spike in questions during the week of the annual training rollout.
Right, like an ongoing conversation.
Exactly. If managers are regularly hearing their team say, hey, this felt a little off, I wanted to flag it, then that speak-up behavior has become a permanent cultural artifact.
And the third indicator of success.
The training scenarios themselves look completely normal. If your training only tests memory by showing obvious cartoonish bribes, you aren't testing recognition.
You're just testing if they're awake.
Basically. The scenarios must feature well-intentioned people facing subtle friction. If the scenarios feel like a documentary of a normal Tuesday, the training is doing its job.
But practically speaking, and I have to ask this, if we train an entire global workforce to constantly hit pause, investigate their internal friction, and escalate every time they feel a little weird about an email. Doesn't that just paralyze a fast-moving company?
It is a totally logical concern.
Like, doesn't it create this endless nightmare of bureaucracy where no one actually makes a decision?
You'd think so, but the data and the methodology show the exact opposite. Go back to that core rule of the action phase, clarity over complexity. By giving employees three simple action paths, proceed, stop, escalate, you actually speed up resolution.
Oh, because they aren't wasting 3 days agonizing over some ambiguous gray area trying to interpret a legal document they don't even understand.
Exactly. They feel the friction, they pause, they escalate through a predefined channel, and they get a definitive answer from an expert. It totally removes the paralysis of uncertainty. They don't have to be legal scholars. They just have to be friction detectors.
That is such a great way to put it, friction detectors.
Yeah.
You know, the ability to recognize subtle pressure, to pause your own internal rationalization, and to map out clear actions without panicking. That is an absolute superpower.
It really is.
Whether you are a corporate executive steering a multinational merger, a freelancer negotiating with a tricky client, or just someone trying to navigate messy office politics, it keeps you out of trouble, and it keeps you from becoming the cautionary tale.
And it is a superpower built entirely through practice. You cannot read your way into being decision ready. You have to rehearse the friction.
So to summarize the core takeaway from this deep dive for you listening, true readiness doesn't come from memorizing a dusty policy document. It comes from actively practicing the ability to recognize normal looking risks.
Resisting those subtle everyday pressures that try to warp our judgment.
And deploying that crucial decision ready interrupt, that tiny, powerful micro pause.
You know, if we step back and look at this as a universal human framework, there's a really profound final thought to consider here.
Okay, let's hear it.
We've spent all this time exploring how this tiny pause between impulse and action can prevent million-dollar corporate disasters. But the mechanics of human rationalization are exactly the same, whether you are at a boardroom table or your own kitchen table.
Oh, wow. Applying this to our personal lives.
Think about the conflicts we could avoid every single day. Consider the pressure of an escalating argument with a partner and that immediate internal rationalization that tells you, I am right and I just need to have the last word.
Oh, I've definitely been there.
We all have. But what if we trained ourselves to recognize that internal emotional friction? What if we hit pause before sending that angry text message or before making an impulsive budget-breaking purchase just because we had a stressful day at work?
The check engine light is literally always flashing.
Always. The question is simply whether we have trained ourselves to stop the car and look under the hood.
Treating our own emotional friction as valuable data, rather than just a cue to react and justify it later, that completely changes how you interact with the world. I mean, I am absolutely going to be monitoring my own mental check engine light differently from now on. Thank you all for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the obvious, keep noticing that subtle friction, and we will catch you next time.